Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Andreas Dresen is an award-winning director and writer. His national and international acclaimed films include Halbe Treppe, Summer in Berlin, Gundermann, Rabir Konas vs. George W. Bush, Cloud Nine, and From Hilde with Love. Andreas also directs theater as well as opera productions. He's a member of the Akademie der Künste Berlin-Brandenburg, the European Film Academy, and a founding member of the German Film Academy. We talked to him via video call for this interview. Andreas, welcome to Deep Dive Genre.
Hello, nice to be here. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Among some of the films you directed are The Wonderful Stilles Land, Summer in Berlin, Wolke 9, Gundermann, Rabir Konas vs. George W. Bush, and of course, From Hilde with Love. I think it's safe to say that you hold a very special place in German cinema, because the films you've directed have a very specific feel to them. As an audience, we get to share the lives of real people. I'd like to take a brief step back to the beginning of your directing career, if I may. And I read somewhere that you started with a Super 8 camera, if that is correct.
Yes, it is.
The famous Super 8. I think you did you still do theater and opera, but before you really started directing films, I think you did a stint in theater and opera. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more how you started to become a film director?
So I grew up in a theater family in East Germany. I was born in the south of East Germany in Gera, and then I went to the north to Schwerin, and my mother was an actress there at the local theater. And so I spent as a little boy a lot of time not only in the theater kindergarten, because this theater has an own kindergarten, and it was the actors and actresses who worked there could bring their children to that kindergarten during the rehearsals, and I was there. But after the rehearsals, I spent a lot of time, for example, in the canteen, and I was sitting there in between all the actors in their costumes. And so sometimes it was like a fairy tale, sometimes it was, of course, ordinary life of actors and actresses. And so I had from my childhood on the possible to get a view into artistic work, I would say. But on the other hand, of course, I discovered also a lot of political problems people had in former East Germany, because around the theater productions in Schwerin were a lot of discussions, because many of the artists in former East Germany wanted to give also political statements with their art. And of course, that caused problems. And because my mother was married with a director, so I got a deep impression what artistic work meant in East Germany. And then my father gave me a Super 8 camera when I was, I think, 12 or 13 as a present, and I started, if you want, so my film career. And because I started to create little Super 8 movies together with my friends in school, and that was the beginning of my film work, because I was really impressed not only about the work, which was really powerful to create a story with pictures, with music and all these things, but on the other hand also was the possibility of show these little films to an audience and to have the feeling that this can create discussions, that films can have an impact on society. And from that point on, I have the wish to become a director, and I went to the one and only film school in East Germany, to Potsdam-Babelsberg.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also in an interview, you said you have a certain affinity with people who are out and about in the world, in the normal world. Why do you think you gravitate towards these people, their stories? And with all the funding becoming more difficult, is it more difficult to get these stories made?
two difficult questions. For the first part of the question, I would say, East Germany and all these socialist countries were created to be for so-called ordinary people, because the working class was in the middle of the East German society. I grew up with all these statements about the working class, and sometimes this seemed to be phrases. But on the other hand, when you went into the factories and spoke to the people, you had always the impression that these people knew a lot about what was going on in East German society. They were really open and full of political critic. And that was interesting for me. And on the other hand, when I started my film career later in the reunited country, I discovered that most of the films which were created have in the center more or less well-established people in the upper class. And if you watch German television and the typical crime stories there, you see always a lot of people in the upper class, yeah. Nice flats, nice houses. But this is not the way most of the people in Germany are living. And I came back to my childhood and I started again to be interested in these people who are running our society, who work at the post office or as a streetcar drivers, people like that. And I started in the late 90s to bring these people back on screen. And until now, I'm still interested in doing that, because this is the biggest part of our society, I would say. And of course, it is always difficult to do. I think it is not a question of funding. It is an artistic question, because as an artist, artists always like to go to the extremes. You know, they want to speak about very poor people or very rich people. And if you go in the middle, it is always difficult, because from the first moment on, you have the feeling that the stories you can tell about these people are not extreme enough to create a story. And so it's always a lot of work to do that. But I think there's a value to do that, because we have to accept that our societies are run by people like this. And so it's a big task for artists and politicians to have respect for people like that.
True. And talking about the work, you tend to work quite frequently with Laila Stieler.
Yes.
How important is a shared creative shorthand for you, or for both of you, maybe?
I got to know Laila before I started my studies at the film school in Potsdam-Babelsberg, so in the middle of the 80s, and we know each other now for nearly 40 years. Unbelievable. And she's not only a very good old friend of mine, but on the other hand, you mentioned this is a very important collaboration ship for me, because we started working together on films at the film school. Then we started to do the writing process together. Our first script we did together, for example, Stilles Land, you mentioned that film, Silent Country. We wrote the screenplay together. And through all these years, we came together again and again, because we had the feeling that we share the same point of view on people, on life, and we share also a similar kind of humor. And these things are very important for working together. And if you know each other very well, sometimes it makes it easier to work together, to come together, because you do not have to show anything to each other anymore. You do not have to show that you are talented or whatever. You can start on a very high level of trust, I would say. Mm-hmm. This is very important for our collaborationship. And for that reason, I hope it will go on still for a long time.
Well, as an audience member, I hope so too. You already answered a little bit of my next question about the writing process, but I was also wondering, how do you find your stories, or you and Laila find your stories? Do you go back and forth, or do you come with an idea to each other? How does that usually work, or is it different for each project?
It is different for each project, I would say. For example, to speak about Silent Country, our first long feature film. So we did a lot of researches in these days, in the beginning of the 90s, because as I already mentioned, I grew up in a theater family, and there were a lot of stories told in these days about what was happening in theaters after the fall of the wall. And this seemed to be interesting for us to create a kind of microcosmos of the East German Revolution in a little theater far away. Mm-hmm. And so we did a lot of researches in a lot of theaters, and this was one way to create a story, of course. And on the other hand, for example, when Laila started to work on Gundermann, mm-hmm. She spoke to a lot of people who knew him very well, of course, to his wife, to his friends, to the members of his former band, and to all these people. And so we had a lot of material after that researches. And then the process starts to try to create a film of 2 hours. But the beginning is a big parcel full of elements of the life of this hero. It is always different, I would say. And it comes with the project. And of course, the first moment is our interest for a character or for a special story.
Mm-hmm. Talking about special stories, Wolken 9, Cloud 9, holds a particular place in my heart. I really, really enjoyed that film. And still, it's a very rare sight to see older, weathered characters in a love story. And looking back on the film, were there any particular challenges on making the film, like finding the actors or certain scenes?
I should mention in the beginning, it's a love triangle, I would say, in between elderly people. And it's a film about love and sexuality in between of elderly people. Because when we started that production, I was wondering that there was a lack of films who show that elderly people are able to fall in love, that they have still big emotions. And our intention was to show that you can get older, your skin gets older, maybe your hair gets gray, but your emotions do not get older. In the center of your heart, you always stay a kind of teenager, and you can still fall in love even if you are 70 or 80, and it creates the same emotions, the same longing. And this is wonderful. And I did a lot of researches for that film as well, and I spoke to so wonderful elderly people. And this film production became a matter of the heart. And it was not so difficult to find the actors for that, even if there was nudity in the film. But I had the feeling when I spoke to the actors in the center, of course, Ursula Werner, she was already a well-known theater and film actress, but more, I would say, in East Germany. And when I spoke for the first time to her in the canteen of the Maxim Gorki Theater in Berlin,
yeah,
she immediately agreed. She looked into my eyes and said, I really want to do that. But I told her, listen, Ursula, you have to be naked in front of a camera. You know that. You are at the end of your 60s. And no problem. We have to do that, she told me. And so, of course, I think the biggest problem was for me, because it is not so easy if you are 20 or 25 years younger than your protagonists. It is not so easy to direct sex scenes. And yeah. I'm not a huge fan of sex scenes at all in movies, because it's always difficult to make.
True.
But if you have to do that with elderly people, there is a kind of inner barrier, I would say, to do that. But the actors felt so free, and it seemed to be so simple to do that at the end, that it became a part of the process. And I think if anybody sees that film, anybody can feel it, yeah, how the atmosphere on the set was. It was a kind of total freedom. And this is important. And I hope that people in the audience can feel that, and that they can take part of this freedom into their own life.
Nice. Summer in Berlin was, well, a perfect summer film in a way, but also a very topical social portrait of the city of Berlin and its people. I have to say, I loved the film, but I struggled a bit with the character of Katrin, her alcoholism, but still you managed, you know, the way you portrayed her to, so I could feel empathy for her. And I'm still, you know, sometimes wondering when I think about the film, how, as a director, do you go about depicting these broken characters so people can still relate to them? Because you're very good at that.
It's the most interesting point for me as a filmmaker to show people in their inner contradictions. And everybody of us, we are not superheroes. Sometimes we are failing. Sometimes we are courageous. It depends on our situation. And when you lay in your bed in the evening and you look back onto the day, you will see a lot of difficult moments, maybe on the other hand, also nice and beautiful moments. And this is life, I would say. And when I create a story and a character, most of the time together with screenplay writers, so Summer in Berlin, we have to mention, of course, Wolfgang Kohlhase, who was a living legend of a screenplay writer. And this was our first collaboration. And he, in my eyes, he created a wonderful story about so-called ordinary people in Berlin or in contemporary Germany, you can say. And of course, Katrin and Nike are not superheroes, the two women at the center of that story. And Katrin is unemployed. She has no work. She has to take care on for her little son. Mm. And she has not enough money, and it's not so easy to find the right partner. And so she steps into an alcohol problem, and she has to go to the hospital. And this is what the film is speaking about. So, and I think it's easy to identify even with a character like this, because if you go onto the street, you see a lot of characters like this if you open your eyes. Mm. And if you ride with the Berlin subway, you will find a lot of women and men like Katrin. And this is interesting, not to close the eyes for problems of people in our contemporary society, because these problems are most of the time created by the political situation, created by a society which is, and in the center of our society is earning of money. We have to earn a lot of money. We have to be very successful. We have to be rich and beautiful.
Yes, always more, more, more.
Yes. And this creates a lot of pressure for the people. Yeah. And some of them are broken. And I want to speak about them as well.
Okay. I mentioned earlier in the introduction that you're also directing opera. I think last year you directed Tchaikovsky at the Semper Opera in Dresden. And another quote from you, you said, opera is very different from film. You have to get away from realism. In contrast to real life, people are constantly singing.
That's true.
What are your biggest challenges in directing in the world of opera, other than the constant singing? And what is your biggest joy when you do it?
If you work as a stage director, the work is totally different from working with people in front of a camera, because this is not a normal situation that people are on stage and 500 or 1,500 people are watching them. And so when I use a camera, I can make a close-up. I can go very close to the actors, and I can bring even minimal reactions to the audience. And if they are on a stage, they are, in a way, far away. So I have to step over this distance. And so I use other expressions. And especially in the opera, I'm not interested at all in recreate a kind of realistic atmosphere. I want to do something artificial. I want to follow the intention of opera composers and opera writers, because they create they recreate reality with music, with words, in a total artificial situation. And I want to, I'm a big fan of Peter Brook, who's a very famous British stage director. And yeah. he wrote a very interesting book about theater, and it's called The Empty Room. Because what do you need in theater? You need an empty room. And you can look into an empty room, and all the emotion, all the world you can watch is created by the actors, by the singers. So what you need in theater most is imagination. This is very important for me when I'm working in theater. And I want to challenge the imagination of the audience. I want to challenge the imaginations of the singers. And so more or less often I use abstract settings, and and the audience can fill these abstract settings with their own life experience. And if it works, they can have the feeling that this is a recreation of their own experiences, of their own life, even if the people are singing. And this is interesting for me.
I hope it's safe to say that music is a big part of your creative life, obviously for the opera, but obviously also for filmmaking. You made the movie about Gundermann, and I think you played as music in a band with actor Alexander Scheer as well.
Yes.
How important is music for your filmmaking process? I mean, I know some people do full soundtracks for themselves, for their films. Is that something that you do, or is it more sort of a collaboration between the camera and the music?
It depends, I would say. Sometimes I prefer to work without music at all, because I have sometimes a feeling in modern productions that the music and the sound design, the whole use of special effect of CGI, all these things in the film industry try to overwhelm an audience, try to be always bigger than life. And sometimes for me, it is interesting to step a little bit back and to see, of course, if I start with nothing, so what do I really need for storytelling? And sometimes I do not need music, even if it's wonderful and even if it's a big part of my own life. For example, From Hilda with Love has only two pieces of music, two very little pieces of music, one in the center and then in the end, that's it. So the film is more than 2 hours. And most of the time, this is only sound design. And this is interesting for me. And music is always very important for me if it do not tries to overwhelm an audience, but if it can add something to the movie in a very special way, then it can be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the end, I have a few rapid-fire questions for you.
Okay.
Is there a particular story that you would still like to tackle?
There are still a lot. First of all, I would really like to work for children again. Mm-hmm. And I have a project which is a Christmas story for children. And since I've done a lot of very strong historical stories, I would really like to work for children again, because this is the audience of tomorrow. And we have to give our very best to give them a feeling that cinema could be a very important place for their life.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about the work of a director that people have? People not in the industry, let's put it that way.
Yeah, this is a lot of people have the feeling that the director is a kind of dictator who's standing in the center of his crew and in the center of the actors and is always shouting and very angry and powerful. But I think this is really a misconception, yeah. because as a director, you have to collaborate. Mm-hmm. I cannot work alone. I'm a team player, and I do not like hierarchies. So, and that's why I would say filmmaking is a process of collaboration of so many people. And if a film works in the end, more than one guy had a lot of work more than one day, I would say.
Very, very true. And as you mentioned, you started with 11 or 12 with your first films. So you've been at this for quite a while. How has the work changed over the course of the years for you? Would you say that maybe technology has made it easier or has made certain things harder? Or maybe it's something different that you say that has changed?
I started with Super 8. I went on to 16 millimeter to 35 millimeter. I started with video when I did the improvised movie. So I would say the technical equipment helps us to create stories. Tech can make it easier, but it is not the most important thing. The most important thing for filmmaking is imagination. And people who are too interested just in the technical process do not realize that this is only a very small part of the process of filmmaking. The most important thing is the creativity in between people. What I always had in all these years was a camera and mm-hmm. somebody who was behind that camera. And this person behind that camera is much more important than the technical equipment.
Mm-hmm. And one final question. Can you share which project you're currently working on or maybe will be working on next? Is it that Christmas movie you just mentioned?
To be honest, yes, but we have some problems with the funding, as always. And so I do not know if it will be the next project. And so I started to work together with Laila Stieler again mm-hmm. on two different projects. And I hope and I cross my fingers in that next year I can shoot again. We will see. Like everybody in film industry, we depend on so many difficult problems, on funding, yeah. on good ideas. But until the last week, I worked with students in Rostock, and there's a nice upcoming Next Generation. Wow. And if I cannot work on my own, I want to give some experiences to them. And this is also nice.
Okay. Well, I'm crossing my fingers as well.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Andreas. It was lovely.
Thank you for having me.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.